And welcome to the Taylor Report. It's CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. And with me is Phil Conlon, Classical Underground, Wednesdays 6 to 8. How are you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil. I'm good.
We can tell people we have an early bird donations to CIUT. Next week, by the way, the 13th, we will be here at 5 o'clock, and we will be asking to become a member, urging you to join up, support the great little station, CIUT. And if you want to go to it, CIUT.fm, you can start donating now.
And then you can donate some more next week.
And next week even more. That's right, as your income increases. Today we're going to talk to David Jacobs, a Toronto lawyer, about the this new act passed by Parliament. I call it the sanctions of Putin, actually, would be the better name for it. It's got another name. We'll get into that. And then at the halfway point, we will be talking to Zafar Benghash about the exciting developments of all things inside the monarchy of Saudi Arabia. And we're going to have to cover a lot of territory because the ground is shaking in that region. And so Zafar Benghash and David Jacobs. And David Jacobs is with us now. Are you there, David?
I am here. How are you?
Very well. David, by the way, congratulations on I saw you were featured in an interview, a Black Agenda Report and Counterpunch, with the Berkeley journalist, Anne Garrison, regarding the decision by Burundi to pull out of the International Criminal Court. And it's a very dramatic story. I hope people go to it. It was published November, I think, 2nd in the Black Agenda Report, November 3rd in Counterpunch. I think both journals recognize this is a very important development. This is the first African nation to make this decision, but your interview indicated there will probably be more. Did you get that right?
Yeah, I think so. What had happened is that the South African government wrote that it was going to pull out, and it had given various reasons for doing it. One, that they didn't think their government was being respected by the International Criminal Court. Two, the International Criminal Court had gone and the prosecution anyway had sought the extradition of the president of Sudan, Omar Bashir, while he was attending a meeting in South Africa, and the South African government said, well, we're not going to do that because, we're involved in all sorts of things, including peace negotiations, and really help peace negotiations to arrest somebody. And on top of that, they said that there's a provision in the Rome Statute, which is a foundation legislation for the International Criminal Court, that in these circumstances allows a consultation between the International Criminal Court and the government in respect of these extraditions. So the South African government had asked for consultation, instead of which the prosecution simply moved to try to have President Bashir arrested. And the South Africans thought that was intolerable, and was their deputy justice minister said that this smacked of colonialism, and they weren't going to stand it. Now, what happened?
Smacked is an unnecessary word, I guess.
Well, that's actually my paraphrase of what he said. He went on in some details, saying that
David, you are a lawyer. People should know you've practiced. You've been to The Hague, and of course, you defended clients at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda.
Yep.
It is striking, is it not? And we'll move on to the other subject, but I want to make sure we underline this. Just how high-handed and arrogant this little bitty brand-new court is. They were acting like the whole world belonged to them.
Yes, and, the South African government, among others, wouldn't stand for it. Now, you'll see press reports saying that the South African government has withdrawn its demand to withdraw, if I can put it that way, from the ICC. But if you look at it closely, what's happened, and there seems to be a tug of war between the courts and the government on this. So the courts have now said that the government has to seek parliamentary approval rather than do this by way of a governmental notice that it wishes to withdraw. So it's as far as I know, it's on hold at the moment, their withdrawal. because of the rulings of the courts. And again, there was a struggle between the courts and the government on the extradition of Bashir. So that'll play out, I'm sure.
And by the way, when you say play out, while all this little shuffling and dance was going on, Bashir went from being public enemy number one to being now okay by the U.S., and they've taken him off their list of bad guys.
Yeah, and that makes one believe that...
so if he'd been picked up,
International Criminal Court would be less excited about him. I mean, there's a lot of hand-wringing in the Western press about what Burundi has done. They aren't hand-wringing so much about the fact that of 10 active cases have been active for the ICC, 9 involve Africans, and people seem to notice that there are large-scale breaches of international law committed by rather big and non-African powers, such as the United States and Great Britain. Even the British House of Commons recognized that the attack on Libya was full of all kinds of grotesque illegalities. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem to have come to the attention of the prosecution there. While it happily indicted Muammar Gaddafi and his family in the midst of what was obviously an illegal attack on Syria by a U.S.-led coalition.
Yes.
On Libya. I apologize.
Yeah. So Burundi then is standing up for Africa by its taking this stand. It's a dramatic development. Urge people, go to read the Ann Garrison interview with David Jacobs, Black Agenda Report, and Counterpunch. And the one it's a November 2nd, 3rd, if you'll help with the search. And by now you've found it while I'm still trying to think of the date. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. David, this thing of there's what I'm calling the Putin sanctions legislation, very popular now. In the United States Congress in 2012 passed a piece of legislation, and attached to it was called the Magnitsky Act. By the way, I'm interested in the fact that four senators did not vote for it. One of those four was Bernie Sanders. People here seem to love Bernie, but they also hear they like the Magnitsky Act. They haven't asked themselves, why didn't Bernie vote for it? And I think something like 20 members of the United States Congress. And the reason I mention that is that now the same legislation, basically, and concept has come to the Canadian Parliament. And it turned into a show of class solidarity or multi-party loving solidarity, the NDP, the Liberal Party, the Bloc, the Conservatives, and probably the Green singular, voted for it, this act, which says that we should sanction, give us the power of government, the government power to sanction Russian, various individual Russians, for something that happened, the death of an individual in Russia in 2009. It strikes me as crazy. I don't understand why nobody in Parliament debated this and wondered what the heck is going on. Can you tell us, by the way, what the heck is going on?
Well, timing is everything, right, as in politics and comedy, I guess. And this is a kind of a grotesque mixture of both, I think. So Magnitsky dies in prison in 2009, and there's no doubt about that. But then this legislation comes through years later. So it comes through in the proper name of the act in the United States is the Russia and Moldova Jackson-Vanik Repeal and Sergei Magnitsky Rule of Law Accountability Act of 2012. Wrap your mind around that. The Russians call this propaganda and part of an anti-Russian campaign. So if you sort of think about the timelines, the ramping up of this sort of extreme anti-Russia hysteria in the United States happens sort of coinciding with this around this time. And of course now, if any of you, your listeners, turn on CNN, MSNBC, BBC, CBC, at almost any hour of the day or night, you'll see lurid stories about Russia, which rival anything we heard during the Cold War or, frankly, before. You can say anything you like about Russia. So we're told Magnitsky was a lawyer who exposed corruption, who was beaten to death in jail. It appears that none of those things may be actually true, according to no less an authority than Wikipedia. Magnitsky was a tax accountant. Certainly, according to people who've looked into these things more deeply, they say, well, he was an accountant. And so he died in 2009, but this was in the midst of a lengthy tax fraud investigation of Browder and Browder's companies. Bill Browder, that is, who was a head of something called Hermitage Capital.
Yep, current Hermitage Capital Management. By the way, how do we end up with a hero, a hedge fund billionaire who gave up his U.S. citizenship so he wouldn't have to pay taxes, become this clean, idealist leader of the great cause of bringing human rights to Russia?
Well, that's one point. You make a great point there, because that's a
hedge fund
fact. That's a fact, and we can find it on the internet, CBS and so on, that Bill Browder renounced his U.S. citizenship in, I think, in the 90s, 1998. Yeah, 1998.
According to the U.S. government.
Yes, because he was becoming subject to taxation for his offshore accounts. So he didn't like that. So he's a hedge fund manager, and we toss that term around, but a hedge fund is a highly dubious thing, maybe a highly dubious thing. These are investment funds. Now, generally, investment funds are subject to regulation. We can argue about how effective or serious that regulation is, but it is. And in Canada, we have, and in the U.S., we have some securities commissions, which have a lot of requirements for investments, for public offerings and prospectuses and so on. However, hedge funds operate outside it. They operate in a kind of twilight. They are deliberately used to avoid regulatory oversight. They bypass licensing requirements applicable to investment companies. They operate with a lot of flexibility.
They're too big to be watched.
That's right. They're different from mutual funds or other investment funds. And they have their own rules about who can actually invest in them. I mean, assuming you or I had sufficient money to want to invest in these things, it's not an open door. It's not like investing in the stock market or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is already something which is quite dubious. He had amassed a huge fortune in the wake of the collapse of the Soviet Union, where there was a massive sell-off of public assets.
Yeah, the hedge fund people, particularly U.S. capital, according to U.S. capital itself, moved into Russia like locusts.
Like locusts. And notwithstanding that at some point, and forgive me for not knowing at which point or how the Russian laws worked, was that investments in these companies were restricted to Russians, not foreigners. And one of the problems that they had with Bill Browder and his Hermitage Capital is that he wasn't a Russian. So one of the charges against him was that he essentially bilked the Russian treasury out of hundreds of millions of dollars. And again, this was an investigation which commenced around about 2004 in Russia. That is 5 years before Magnitsky's arrest and death in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So what Mr. Browder did is sort of turn the tables and say, well, no, it wasn't me. I didn't defraud the treasury. They defrauded the companies I was involved in. That's why the money didn't get into the treasury. And if you look at his history, he seems to have a habit of aggressively striking first with litigation against people who had claims against him. So if you look at his history, there are a few lawsuits there which have been confidentially settled in circumstances where he's being accused of of all kinds of financial skullduggery. So this is an exceptionally murky thing for us to get into. So you would think that when our parliament was getting into this, they would ask a number of questions themselves, like, well, who's Bill Browder? What's this multi-billionaire doing coming to us and asking for sanctions against a government which is in the process of investigating and, frankly, in the process of indicting him. He was charged. He was indicted. He didn't show up for the trial. And
you can't lose, right? Because everybody's agreed that the greatest demon now, and this is almost like a change of weather now, Putin is totally dubious. So if anybody accuses him, Putin loses.
That's right. And you know, the mantra is that he was beaten to death in a Russian jail. As far as I understand it, the Russians themselves looked into what happened to Magnitsky. He was unwell. It may have been that he was not given proper medical treatment and medication and died. I don't know that it's more than that, and it's what the Russians said. So, for example, the head of the Russian Parliament Committee for Foreign Affairs, a man called Pushkov, has said about this, look, people die in custody under suspicious circumstances. Human rights are violated all over the world, including in the U.S. and U.S. allies and Saudi Arabia and so on.
But Guantanamo, which, of course, is an integral part of the United States. I forget what state it's a member of, but
we're talking about
foreigners
the United States,
being held
which have mm-hmm. the largest prison population on an absolute and per capita basis of any country that we're ever aware of in history. Just in maybe with the exception of, I don't know, I hate to do these comparisons, but I'm not sure of the statistics for during World War II for the Axis countries. But certainly today, it's just tremendous, tremendously hypocritical. But I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that there is a political goal behind this. So, for example, when the Canadian and the U.S. government says, oh, you know, we're going to have sanctions against people who are involved in criminal behavior. We're going to stop either government from doing that under current criminal laws. So why do we need to embellish this with a law which has got such a fancy name, the Russia, Moldova, and Sergei Magnitsky, rule of law? Why do we need to do that? Because, again, you want to say that Russia is capable of absolutely any monstrosity and just repeat it and repeat it and repeat it, just the way we're repeating now the meaningless phrase that Russia hacked the elections.
Yes.
So all of it.
Well, everybody knows that now.
It's
now official because all the comedians and late night have agreed. So, I mean, that's like the Supreme Court.
It's one of those big lies which you repeat and repeat and repeat until it becomes a fact. Right?
I was just struck. I mean, again, what got me was that, as I say, Bernie Sanders voted against. Here he's revered. I saw him he was on the University of Toronto campus, and they were hanging from the windows to listen. He at least exercised his power as a senator, didn't go along. And The Nation magazine, again, a respected liberal journal, has written about this, and The New Republic, and both of them, they wrote skeptical articles about what all this is about, basically identifying it as Russophobic, but also pretty much violating how international relations are supposed to be conducted. I think it was Stephen Cohen, who knows something about Russia. Of course, he's now on the banned list, but a Princeton professor. He said that, you know, you're supposed to go by some kinds of law. There isn't – he says you can't rely – you can't say an NGO reports, therefore my government's going to sanction another government. What's an NGO know about it? I mean, did anybody go into a court and examine that NGO and ask how they came by the information, how reliable it is, who the sources? They simply – and they have these entities like Human Rights Watch or Amnesty – both of which receive funding from the British government, the American government, and as though there's some sort of sanctimonious body that cannot be questioned.
Well, what's astonishing, of course, is what we choose to believe and what we choose not to believe. I mean, obviously, more often than not, these NGOs are extensions of American intelligence or Canadian intelligence, assuming those things are not contradictions.
Well, Parliament has no intelligence.
That's right. But what's what's even more disturbing, Browder, of course, likes to, notwithstanding the fact that he appears to love U.S. democracy, at least from a distance.
Now that he's given it up.
Now he's given it up.
Yes.
He moves with absolute speed and power and money mm-hmm. to shut down anyone who's going to be critical of him. So there are two important examples. One is a man called Alex Kreiner, K-R-A-I-N-E-R, who's written a book. And the book is called...
The Killing of William Browder,
Deconstructing Bill Browder's Dangerous Deception. And he's somebody who's done an investigation and came to the conclusion that the Browder's stories were all incorrect. I mean, just to take some relatively small examples, I mean, Browder says that Magnitsky was posthumously tried on trumped-up charges and convicted. That's not what happened. He hasn't been posthumously tried. His case remained open only because Magnitsky's mother, on the urging of Bill Browder, told the state not to shut down the case simply because Magnitsky had died. Browder himself, though, was tried and convicted. So there was no trial of Magnitsky, and Browder was convicted of fraud and tax avoidance. But what's happened? Can you get Kreiner's book? So he's complained that his book is now being banned by Amazon. And I must say, I myself tried to find it on Amazon and couldn't. So there's that. There's another story, though, which is even more, well, at least as disturbing. There's a man called Nekrasov, a Russian filmmaker, not a fan of the Russian government. He considered himself many years a dissident and a friend of Bill Browder. Browder and he got together to make a film about what had happened to Magnitsky, and according to Nekrasov, he went in it fully expecting the story would bear out. But in repeated conversations with Browder, because Browder kept contradicting himself about the story, and Nekrasov looked into it, and reluctantly, as far as I know, from at least listening to interviews with Nekrasov, decided that the Russian government's version of events was correct and that Bill Browder's was not correct. However, it's been near impossible to see Nekrasov's film.
You know, by the way, and I have to say something I know about that, and you may know, and I'll ask you to elaborate too on this, is that they showed the film. The only place it's been shown where it got a kind of appropriate, respectful opportunity to be seen and talked about in Washington, D.C., and the host of the evening was Seymour Hersh.
That's right. Yes. Seymour Hersh, very well respected.
Circle Hersh's name. He's can't be trusted anymore.
Yeah. Well, there you go. But we're told that
we're the freest society ever. That's why we can't see these films.
We're not autocratic at all. But Nekrasov's film can't get shown in Europe, in the UK, as far as I understand it. I've tried to find it on YouTube. And I get some very strange, where you actually find it, you actually get some very strange notice saying that you can't look at it. So
can't look at it that way.
Yeah, and that's YouTube. And, YouTube.
This is like the old paranoid 50s. I remember once going in a bookstore, and it was selling poetry mainly, but I heard they had left books there. And I asked about, and the guy wanted to know how I found out that they had these books. And I said, I'm sorry, I wasn't supposed to know. Went back out on the street. Anyway, they've created this paranoid atmosphere. It seems to me that the fact that all of Parliament voted one way and then they all loved each other and hugged and waved at the members of the Russian family in the gallery shows that they are terrified. They're what I call the petrified forest, Canadian Parliament, petrified with fear. That they're unanimous. At least the Americans still have guys who say, "Well, I'm from out of town and I'm not voting for this." But in this case, Bernie Sanders, I keep bringing his name up because he's supposed to be a saint now, and he didn't think it was a great idea.
Yeah, I mean,
One last thing, Dave. I want to make sure I mention it. I don't know if you're aware of this, but when that bill was introduced, that was in 2012, and the point of the bill was to increase and liberalize trade with Russia. That's why they attached the act to it, which said, "What we're still putting you on notice. But we think you're bad." It was like, and so Obama had to sign something, which was it was a bill that contradicted itself. On the one hand, wider trade. On the other hand, we reserve the right to name people in your country that we think are human rights abusers and create havoc for you. Kind of a nightmare. By the way, we should remind everybody, John McCain is the father of the original bill.
That was certainly the complaint about...
The founding father.
The complaint about this in Russia. They said, well, you know, you want to have more trade with us on the one hand. On the other hand, you're hanging this over our heads, you know. The Russians, the Russian parliament has called this a hypocritical, empty bill and harmful because it serves to worsen relations between Moscow and Washington.
By the way, why does Canada want to do this? If Freeland and others went to the meeting talking about free trade, Mexico, Canada, the U.S., and Trump's response was to urinate into the salad, you know. It was like and they all went along with that. And they pass laws that he wants passed. I mean this kind of damaging legislation. Ridiculous.
Well, you have to think of what's happening in the Canadian Parliament. Last year we had Stefan Dion as a foreign minister, who was lukewarm, not to mention critical of passing the Magnitsky Act. He was looking to try and mend fences to some extent with Russia. He was unceremoniously kicked in the rear end out of his office to make way for Chrystia Freeland, who is well known as for her Russophobia. She's persona non grata.
Those are her credentials.
That's right. She's persona non grata.
What does she do best? She can curse them in their own language.
That's right.
She's a great advance.
She's somebody who...
We're so proud of her.
She's somebody who without shame, can tell the media that... reports about her Nazi grandfather were Russian disinformation when these reports were information which came from the archives of the government of Alberta, not well known as a Russian suburb.
Well, at least her grandfather left them there for everybody to read.
Yeah, I do recommend
proud of his work.
Just to go back to the Nekrasov film, there's a few articles you can find on the internet by Gilbert Doctorow is one, and the other there's an article called A Blacklisted Film in the New
Cold Robert
Cold
Perry,
War.
Consortium News, talks about it as well.
That's right. That's his article, A Blacklisted Film in the New Cold War. That's Robert Perry, Consortium News, August 2 of 2017. It's well worth reading, you know.
Well, David, we've taken up a lot of your time. You covered the ground nicely. We really do appreciate it. And
thank you.
I hope everybody goes to Counterpunch and Black Agenda Report, read the interview done with you by the Berkeley journalist and Garrison.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We're on SoundCloud, The Taylor Report, and we are facebook.com/Taylor-Report. And so we're a hyphen on Facebook, and we are The Taylor Report. I guess we'll take a break. That's the least we could do, and we'll be back. Mm-hmm.